Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, Falcons fans of all ages, it's time once again for the Falcoholic Post-Game Podcast. You may know me as your host, Corey Woodruff, because that's who I am, absolutely, of course. We are joined today by nobody. This is the solo edition of the podcast. Just going to be talking to myself today and all of you that are listening. Hopefully there are some people out there that it's just one random person sitting in their living room listening to me talk to them from a state away. Then hey, I guess it works out. So obviously, if you are a Falcons fan, you've got to be feeling pretty good right now with the way that the Falcons looked, at least for the starting teams against the Chiefs on Friday night. The team lost that game, but they were able to put up they put up two touchdowns, and then they would have kicked a field goal on one drive if they had not been messing with a couple of things. But I actually think that they would have scored a touchdown in the second drive that they had if it had been a game-time situation, or at least it would have been 3 points for Matt Bryant. So the first team offense looked good. Second team offense with Matt Schaub had a touchdown. The first team defense looked pretty good against Patrick Mahomes and all the weapons that the Chiefs have. So we're going to talk about that a little bit, but since this is just me today, I probably would struggle if I just had to talk 30 minutes uninterrupted about one single thing. So I am going to go through my half preseason roster guess. If you knew anything about what happened with Rise Up Leader last year, I did a pokey rap about the roster. I won't subject you to that, although that was enjoyable, but I will give you guys kind of where I think the roster is going to be heading, at least right now, although, you know, things change, guys get switched out. We'll see how it goes, but, you know, right now, we're just going to talk about the first team offense for a little bit, because I think there was some worry, again, that Jets game, that they didn't do a whole lot, but they didn't do a whole lot. Like, they literally went in for, like, three plays, and after a penalty, just kind of tapered out. I think that was more cautionary than anything else. They're playing out at the Meadowlands. That's known to be kind of a slick field. I think what Dan Quinn decided, and I think he said this week that he thought about sending them out for another series, and the fact that he didn't meant that he really understood the situation, that, yeah, this is just not worth it. But let's just talk about the first team offense just for a second, because they really looked like they were clicking. You know, obviously, Julio and Devonta didn't play. They were held out. You know, I think with Devonta, it's more cautionary than anything else with his concussion history, and just letting him get some needed rest. And then obviously with Julio, him getting into the sort of program a bit late for reasons we need not talk about again. Just trying to probably ease him back into the program as well and not wanting to have him be injured. But, you know, I think when you look at this first team offense, they look good. I think what Sark was doing with Tevin Coleman was really encouraging. Tevin was getting some really nice runs. They weren't really using him as a passer, but on the ground he was just showing his elusive speed, and the offensive line looked really good. I think that's one of the big reasons why that offense was beginning to click a little bit, is because you saw an offensive line that was taking on, I know not the biggest challenge from Kansas City's front four, but it's still a challenge. You know, it's still NFL quality players that are coming at you. And the Falcons just moved on them. I mean, they really just were able to move the ball with relative ease. And I think a big reason for that is the addition of Brandon Fusco. No offense to Wes Schweitzer. He apparently has really been putting in the work this offseason, setting a really good tone for him, which really helps with the overall program, with the team. You know, complete plaudits to him. But it just looks like it's a different offense when Fusco and Andy Levitre are both on the field. Fusco really does seem like he's able to give them that veteran presence in the middle. Not a guy who will be giving you perfect reps all year, but he's definitely a guy who's going to be able to, you know, hold that job down and not get pushed around as easily by some of the better defensive tackles in the league. I think that the team likes to have these stopgap options at right guard that are a bit inexpensive and can allow them to put money elsewhere. And Fusco's a good player. He's not a great player, but he's a good player. He's solid, and I think that's what the Falcons need. Wes was a bit kind of high variance, low variance last year. Much more low variance when they got into the playoffs and started going against some of these really great defensive tackles. But, you know, I think that with Fusco, it gives them more ability to make the offense look like they want to make it look. And, you know, they said today in the press conference that Fusco was going to be starting that third preseason game, and to me that indicates the job is his, that he has wanted out. It gives the team some really nice depth at guard with Ben Garland and Wes Schweitzer, so, you know, goodness forbid if injury strikes with Fusco, they don't have to be worried that they don't have a guy on their team that hasn't taken starting reps. You know, in a pinch, Fusco can be replaced by Schweitzer and the team will be okay. Schweitzer is a decent player. You know, he's not great. He has things that he struggles against. He's much better against the run than he is against the pass. He's at times a bit of a liability against pass, you know, but I think that if you look at the way the team wants to be on offense, you just have to go with the better player, regardless of the effort that was put in by the guy who's not quite as good. So, you know, hats off to Schweitzer for his offseason. I think that's really awesome, and I think that he could one day be a starter in the league. But for right now, he'll be in Atlanta. He'll be a very relied-upon reserve, and if injury strikes, the team's in a good situation because they do have Schweitzer to turn to. I had a thought, and I don't know if this is legitimate, that maybe kind of, sort of, they would consider trading Schweitzer to a team who needed a right guard, but I feel like the most, like, easy, likely scenario is that it's going to be Wes on the bench holding it out if something happens to Ben Garland, or not Ben Garland, to Brandon Fusco. They both start with B. But speaking of Ben Garland, he's actually going to be out this week. So I'm curious to see how that will impact some of these other guys on the roster who are going to be vying for spots. You've got your J.C. Hasenhausers and your Sean Harlows and your Jamil Douglases and your Celeste Utfetes. Like, but with Ben out, it's going to give those guys more of an opportunity to shine, and we'll talk a bit more about the roster in general in a little bit. But just so you know, Ben's not going to be playing against Jacksonville, which will definitely open things up a bit for somebody else to come out and do something interesting. So, you know, as we move on to talk about some of the weapons, Austin Hooper, I think, was the biggest takeaway from the game. Hooper looks good. He looks much better. And I think last year he was a solid player, but a guy that needed a season to kind of be the main option. And now we are going to see him really take some bigger responsibility in the offense and maybe be one of the main guys that Matt Ryan's looking to move the ball. He looked great. He just looks like he and Ryan have a really nice chemistry going on. He obviously had that great leapfrog touchdown that, you know, just gives you so much encouragement that this guy's got it. Like, he's finally got it down to where he can be a consistent tight end in the NFL. You know, I was not as impressed with him last year as some others were. I know that he didn't have a bad year at all, but I thought he was kind of a bit more up and down than I would have hoped. The Dolphins game stands out especially. You know, obviously it wasn't his fault completely that they lost that game, but he didn't attack the ball hard enough on that interception. And I think a veteran player would have made the play, which would have helped the Falcons get in scoring position and kind of sneak away with that one after the collapse. But maybe they didn't deserve to win that game after what happened, to be honest. But at the same time, this Hooper seems like he could make that play. And I think that's the biggest progression he's made. If he can develop into a red zone option and they can really scheme him to get open down there and he can use some of his talent to get open and to make plays where it really, really counts, then I think you're going to see a much different offense than last year, because the Shanahan offense thrived on the tight end sets. There was this really interesting play where he put Hooper, Logan Paulson, and Eric Saubert all out there to block, and he had this three tight end blocking set, and they ran the ball with Tevin, and it looked really good. So I'd love to see more of that, you know, as you get kind of those extra blockers out there, which can open up more for the run game. You kind of show your hand, but it's also kind of a, hey, just try to block, you know, try to guard this, and it doesn't really work. So I like what's going on with Hooper. I'm very, very, very encouraged with, you know, the progressions he's made, the work he's put in. It's showing. And, you know, if he can be a guy that Ryan can not only rely on to get a check down and to use in the intermediate passing game, but also to get him open for a big play and also utilize him in the red zone, you might be you know, you might see Hooper be that breakout guy this year. And I think that's who Vaughn McClure at ESPN is calling his breakout player of the season. And obviously Vaughn would know, so I'm encouraged by Hooper. This is the biggest takeaway for me, is that he looks good. And now that this offense, we have a really good sample of what it's going to do. I'm excited for Austin Hooper. I think he's going to end up living into that player that the team knew when they drafted him. And he took a couple of years to really learn his role, kind of learn what he's not great at and work on it and get better at it. You know, curious to see how he holds up as a main blocker throughout, but right now, I'm very encouraged. Obviously, you talk about Calvin Ridley, our young rookie who just looked swell out there. He just seems like it really helped him to get some of that extra time with Ryan this summer when Julio was out and really learn what it's like to be a featured receiver in an offense. Obviously, Sanu was working with him all summer. Julio's now working with him. The sky's the limit for this guy. I think when you see just his ability to get open downfield, obviously, we knew the route running was a specialty of his game. That looks great. But the timing seems on with Ryan. His returning skills look really good, and we'll talk a bit more about that with a reader question here in a second. But I am very encouraged by what's going on with Calvin Ridley right now. I think that, he obviously had a really nice touchdown with Schaub in the second team offense. He's coming on quickly, and I think he is going to have an immediate role in this offense. Obviously, when Julio's back and you get Sanu in there, he's still the third option. But he's going to be a very dangerous third option, and for a lot of teams would be a second or even a first option. There could have been a team that needed a top wideout that would have drafted him at that position, and he would be the main guy. You're looking at Carolina, two picks ahead, they picked DJ Moore. He's going to be their top receiver, and I think you're going to have a very similar situation with Ridley if he goes to a team that doesn't have one. But in Atlanta, he's a third receiver, and that's incredible. I think that gives Atlanta just such a difficult offense to defend. And even if the play calling isn't quite where you want it to be, what do you do about the talent? I mean, you can just draw up the most simple plays and just tell people to, hey, do your best here. So I'm excited about Ridley. Really, really pumped to see where he goes, how he develops. Obviously, we'll see how his hands do when he plays the full season. Hopefully, he doesn't get a case of the drops his rookie year, but he seems like a very sound tactician. He seems like a guy who is going to get the fundamentals down pat. So, smart kid, obviously looks like a really good culture fit for the Falcons. So, I'm very excited to see him, contribute this year. That's really what I've got for the Falcons on offense. Matt Ryan looks good, obviously. There really weren't any hiccups with that first team. I think the reason they didn't score on that second drive down is because Sark was trying a couple of things with Ito Smith. I know Ito had an up and down game, but I think the nice thing with him is that they're not really relying on him to be an immediate contributor. He can take a year to get kind of filtered in the offense here and there, and then take his time to kind of learn off the field and learn with the scout team and learn behind Devonta and Tevin and just soak it all in. Because if it goes like we think we do, and Tevin Coleman goes elsewhere in March next year, then Ito will obviously have much more responsibility, and the team is going to rely on him. Hey, Devonta Freeman was a fourth round pick too, and when you have a guy that's able to do that, I think it absolutely opens up more potential for the Falcons to, get those reps in the preseason with Smith, and then let him take the season and kind of groom more behind the scenes and on special teams and maybe a bit in the offense as he's active. But I'm encouraged by Smith. He's going to be a good player, but I just think right now it's more up and down. But if you're wondering, hey, the Falcons look so good, why didn't they score on the second time? I think it's because Sark was just trying to see how Ito would do in short down situations. So I think if you have Devonta or Tevin in here, they probably pick up that first down and the offense continues to drive. So bit of insight on that. So obviously we're all feeling good about the first team offense. Let's talk about the defense for a second. We got to see what they would look like without Deion Jones, and I think it was pretty good. Brian Poole had the standout game of the night. Obviously, we knew his ability to blitz, but he's just such a good on point of attack defensive back. He just has that range to be able to scout the play really quickly and assess it and go make the tackle. I think his coverage skills are not quite as good as his ability to tackle and his ability to stop a play, but I hope his coverage skills are better. He has struggled with slot guys in the past, and we didn't really see a whole lot of that on Friday night, but in the past with him, that has been an issue. So the job is still his, of course, but I'm very curious to see what will happen with him if we get in a situation where he is going back up against those elite slot corners. And just to see how he does. But Poole's a good player, man. He is a very sound tackler, just a very smart player, and just has that quick ability to go in there and just blow a play up. Great blitzer. He's going to be a really important part of this defense for the team this year. I know when they drafted Isaiah Oliver, some people thought, well, does that mean Poole's kind of out of it? Oh, no, very much not. So I'm very curious to see how he does in his coverage, and if he's gotten better there, because he does everything else so well as a slot corner. So encouraged by him. Obviously, Duke Riley had a better game. Still a couple of times where he made some costly errors, but he's getting better, and I think when Deion Jones is back out there full time, it's going to help Duke and elevate his play at the weak side, and I'm really, really, really still convinced that Duke has the job. It's not a situation where, I think he's just so mistake prone that the team won't. They don't seem all that worried. I think that for them, they understand the player they see every day in practice, and they know that that guy is going to take time to develop in a real situation. I think the player that they see in practice is much better than the one that's showing up on film for us, but we don't see the practice guy every day. We don't have those reps. And I think that if the team really was concerned about Duke, they would be worried about what they were seeing in practice. And I think that the game Duke needs time to warm up. If practice Duke was struggling, then you might see the team bring in a veteran. You might see them really rely on Foye Oluokun a little bit more. But I think right now the team is still confident that practice Duke is going to catch up to what on-field Duke is doing. So, I really am confident that Duke will be okay, but you never know. Foye is in the wings. He's a good player, and I'm really curious to see if he will continue to develop as well. The one thing I want to talk about with the defense before we move on is the front four. The pass rushers look good, of course, but it's that interior defense that really has been impressing me so far this preseason. We knew Grady Jarrett was going to come in. He is poised to have a big, big year. But it's the other three guys. My goodness, Terrell McClain looks so much more comfortable in a 4-3 front than he did in Washington last year. I think when you look at his ability to have a guy next to him and not have to be the main anchor of an interior defense, it just frees him up to be able to do what he does well. And he got some nice pressure the other night, did some good stuff against the run. I think he is going to be a very underrated signing when the season gets going. I think that's going to be one of those things like the Falcons were very heads up and they got it done. I think that will end up being just one of those things where it's like, that was big. That was a big signing, and that makes a big difference because they needed somebody that was a veteran to be in there and replace what Dontari Poe was leaving. And I think that even if McClain may not be quite as good of a player as Poe, he's still going to be able to go in there and make a difference. And to pick up the slack, you've got Deidre Sinnott, who really looks like a good young player. Obviously, it's still preseason, and we haven't really seen him in a full game time situation, but he's putting some really encouraging reps on the field. I think when you really break down where Sinnott's year is going to go, they're going to use him. They're going to use him a decent amount, and it's just going to give them a lot of great depth. You've still got Jack Crawford, too, who had some nice reps. So this interior defense looks really promising. And the funny thing is, like a couple of months ago, everyone was kind of concerned that when Poe left, like they don't have a lot of bodies on the defensive tackle position. And now it's like, oh, they're fine. They don't even maybe need to keep five guys because they've got so many rotations that they can do with the four that they have. So I'm encouraged by where this defensive line is going. There's just a lot of excitement, I think, with the potential of the defense this year. We obviously know DeMonte Casey's having a big preseason. He's obviously forcing himself onto the field and is going to be a guy they rely on the three safety sets. But Bleedier Wilson, I think, is having a nice preseason. I think he's solidifying that he will be on the roster and he'll be a guy that they can rotate in and out. We'll talk about Isaiah Oliver here in a bit. I know he's kind of had some lumps, but that's to be very expected. Corners need to take their time to develop in the league. Sometimes they're guys that just really need a couple of maybe a year or two to be who they're going to be for the rest of their career. So, if you're not happy with Oliver so far, we don't even know exactly what he's going to be yet. There's a better player that is just needs time to be able to be developed there. But everything leaves me very confident. There's really not a spot on this roster right now where I'm like, "Goo, there's a real big problem there." And I know some folks may feel that way about Duke's spot, but again, it's like I said, we don't know practice Duke. We know game time Duke, but we don't know practice Duke. And we're seeing game time Duke get incrementally better every week. And to me, that's all you can ask for. So I'm very, very excited for where this team is going to go. We could talk more about some of these smaller roster battles, but I think, your time might be a bit better spent talking about a couple of other things. We'll go into it right now with my kind of roster breakdown. I'll just read them off, and if I think there's something that's uniquely interesting, I'll talk about it. But here's where I think the 53 is going to go. Don't quote me on it, don't hold me to it. But yeah, at the same time, I feel like this is where it probably could be, maybe possibly standing right now, but we'll see. Let's start out at quarterback. I've got three guys. Yes, three guys. That's conversation worthy. Matt Ryan, Matt Schaub, and Kurt Benkert. I think Benkert has shown enough this preseason to where they're going to want to keep him on the roster. I think that this is a guy who would not make the practice squad because he would be swooped up somewhere else. He's a diamond in the rough, but again, through the rough, there'd be a diamond. I think he's good. He would be actually a very solid backup quarterback. Maybe not a starter, but to me, if the Falcons really want him to stay, they're going to have to carve out a place on the 53. I think when you see Dan Quinn in the past complain about there not being enough active roster spots in the league, it's for guys like Benkert. It's like, look, I like this guy a lot, but I'm not ready to put him on the field, obviously. And obviously, I may never. But at the same time, for a backup quarterback, we want to develop him because Schaub's getting older, and Benkert is proving to us in the preseason that there is something to work with there. And if we put him in our development program, let him work with Greg Knapp, let him work with the rest of the staff, perhaps there's something there that could be really interesting for us when Schaub retires. And another NFL team may look at Benkert's reps and go, oh, wow, our backup quarterback situation is really bad, and we have a guy who really doesn't get hurt a lot, so maybe let's just bring Benkert in. Or if we have room to keep a third quarterback, we're just going to sign him anyway. And again, Benkert could want to go somewhere else. Guys can go where they want to once they're cut. They're not bound to the team that cut them to be on their practice squad. So I think they're going to hold on to Benkert. I know that may kind of leave some guys irked elsewhere with positions where they want to see another guy stick on, but just know his roster spot is going to be inactive. Benkert will be inactive all year. They're not going to make him active. It's just a guy that can kind of hold on, like they did with Josh Perkins a couple of years ago, where he only got just a hair of playing time when Jacob Tammy went down. But I think they're going to hold on to Benkert. I'm not sold on the idea that the team is willing to trust the rest of the league to not sign this guy, so they can just kind of sneak him on the practice squad. And even if he is on the practice squad, he's always still prone to be signed by somebody else. So this was a guy that they prioritized in April to go get, and I think that they made a commitment then, and they're going to have to make it now, since he's not just putting a bunch of bad film on tape for the preseason. So I've got to keep him three quarterbacks. I know that they haven't done that in a while, but I think that it's absolutely worth it when you have a young talent like Benkert. Running back, obviously, you've got Devonta Freeman, Tevin Coleman, Ito Smith, and Ricky Ortiz. I think they'll keep three running backs, one fullback. I think Ortiz has the spot locked down. I don't think Luke McNitt has really done a whole lot with the first team enough to where they can justify keeping him. I think it was smart that the Falcons went and got Ortiz when they did. And I think he is proving that he can be a solid player. There was one thing where he was going against Breland Speaks on the first scoring offense, or first or second drive, and he really did a nice job keeping Speaks off of Ryan. Gave him time to actually get that big gain to Calvin Ridley down the field. So that play was made possible because Ortiz made his block. And I think that those are the reps that give the team confidence that he's got the job. Moving on to wide receiver. We've got Julio Jones, Mohamed Sanu Sr., Calvin Ridley, Justin Hardy, Marvin Hall, Russell Gage. I know some folks love to watch these undrafted receivers. I'm a big Dontez Bird fan. I think he'll make the practice squad here unless another team picks him up, and I would love to see him go to another team and be successful. But I think right now the Falcons have six receivers, and it's set. I don't think there's any room for them to keep a seventh receiver. They might be motivated to with a guy like Bird or a Devin Gray, just to keep him around for a year, particularly when Justin Hardy heads on elsewhere. Maybe Marvin Hall could get a bigger deal as well when his deal expires. But I think right now they're set. I mean, Hall has really had a nice preseason. He's developing into a really solid receiver. We know what Justin Hardy can do. Russell Gage is already earning the trust of the coaching staff. He showed his ups on a really nice catch Friday night against the Chiefs. So I feel confident this room is set. It's booked. This is going to be your six. There's no intrigue. Maybe they keep a seventh receiver, but I'm a bit less confident in that, to be honest. Next up, we've got our tight ends, Austin Hooper, Eric Saubert, Logan Paulson. Saubert's beginning to come on nicely. Excited to see what he is going to do as I eat crow because me and our good head honcho at the Falcoholic, Dave Choate, had a friendly discussion about, what might happen at tight end. I wanted him to go get a veteran. He was confident in Saubert, and his confidence paid off. And again, I'm happy about that because that means that we have a guy that can kind of groom in to be that tight end too, and let Paulson focus on being a blocking tight end. Offensive line, I've got Jake Matthews, Andy Levitre, Alex Mack, Brandon Fusco, Ryan Schrader, Ty Sambrello, Matt Gono, Ben Garland, and Wes Schweitzer. I think the starters are set. Fusco obviously taking that right guard job. You've got Garland and Schweitzer as just probably two of the best reserve guards in the NFL. And then your two tackles. I think Ty Sambrello has locked in the swing tackle job. And I think that Matt Gono has been getting a lot of run early in these preseason games. I think the team might pick him over Austin Pastor. I think Pastor's a good veteran, but I also think that, you know, he's not the main swing tackle, and the team may want to go a bit younger there and kind of develop Gono in their D program, because he would be the guy that would be the fourth tackle to step up, because Sambrello would back up both Jake Matthews and Ryan Schrader. So they've got the backup set there. You know, knock on wood, as I knock on my wood here by my recording area, if something happened to both Matthews and Schrader, obviously Gono would be in a starting position, but that's highly unlikely. You know, usually you don't lose both guys in the same period. You might lose one for a little bit, like they did last year with Schrader when he had a concussion, but I think right now the team likes what they're seeing from Gono. I think that Gono is going to be, he's also a flexible player. He can play guard and tackle, and the team likes that. So I think that he might get the job over Pazder, and the Pazder is one of those surprise veteran cuts that we see come the end of the month. But then again, they may hold 10 offensive linemen. Maybe they pick Pazder over Gono, and that I'm speaking a bit obtusely here, but I still feel like Gono right now actually may win that job. So I've got 25 personnel guys for the offense. The only real surprises would be Ben Kurtz staying on the roster as the third quarterback, and Matt Gono winning a job over Austin Pastor. Again, that's because this roster is primarily set. If you move over to the defense, you can see that we've got here at our defensive line, Vic Beasley, Tack McKinley, Brooks Reed, Derek Shelby, Anthony Winbush, Grady Jarrett, Terrell McLean, Deidre Sinnott, and Jack Crawford. That's nine guys. The only surprise there would be them holding on to Anthony Winbush. I think he's playing to earn a roster spot. I think he has been quite impressive this preseason. He seems to be always getting plenty of pressure against some of these other teams. I'm looking forward to kind of seeing him develop more as the preseason goes on. I hope this is not a Chris Odom situation where they just, you know, they don't keep him and they let some other roster spots kind of go elsewhere, and they only keep A on the defensive line, or maybe they keep Garrison Smith or Justin Zimmer at that tackle position, or maybe John Cunningham to kind of fill out the defensive tackle group. But I think Winbush is being, you know, he'll be obviously inactive on game days probably, but I think he's doing enough to where the team will want to hold on to him and let him develop, particularly when Derek Shelby leaves after the year, which I think will be the eventual conclusion there. We don't know how long Brooks' recontract will go through. He could be a potential guy that can be cut to have money go elsewhere. So I think that they like what they're seeing from Winbush, and I think we're all liking what we see from Winbush because he's having a nice preseason, even though he's not a guy we're always, you know, talking about firsthand. But I think he'll be interesting. So I think that would be a surprise roster keep if he gets one of those last spots. Linebacker, we got six guys: Deion Jones, Devondre Campbell, Duke Riley, Kamal Ishmael, Foye Oluokun, and Jonathan Celestine, our buddy Evan Birchfield's preseason darling. I think there's going to be an undrafted guy that makes linebacker because they don't have a lot of depth there right now. And I think it would come down to one of the Emmanuels, Ellerby or Smith, or Celestine. And I think Celestine right now is having the best preseason out of all of those guys. He was a late addition, but he seems to be coming in right to the room. He had a good career at Minnesota. The Falcons seem to like Minnesota linebackers. They had Devondre Campbell, of course, and they also had Jack Lynn last preseason, and now they have Jonathan Celestine. I think Celestine right now has the front runner to get that job and maybe be active on game days purely as a special teamer. Maybe he'll be inactive, but again, that's a position where Kamal Ishmael only has 1 year on his deal. We still don't know exactly where Duke Riley's long-term positioning is going. And again, you just need those reliable guys to have on special teams at linebacker, and also guys that can pitch in and start if they have to. So I like Celestine. He's having a good preseason. He's a good tackler. He's not bad in coverage. So I think the Falcons will keep him right now and let him develop this season, and then maybe rely on him for special teams. But they've got their main five since Oluokun's doing so well. But, you know, I think having six linebackers is good for depth. They have room for it, so I think they keep him. Safety. Four guys: Ricardo Allen, Keanu Neal, DeMonte Casey, Ron Parker. I'm struggling having them cut Tyson Graham because he's such a good player. But again, you can't really justify keeping five safeties active on game day. So even if they kept Graham, I think he would be an inactive, which would be tough. But at the same time, I think that's just one of those decisions where it's a good player that just doesn't fit into a crowded room. I think there's a potential they cut Ron Parker. I feel like, again, they brought him in for a specific reason, and I think that's to back up Neal, but Graham's a good player. And I think there might be a bit of a potential there to have a surprise cut with Parker and have Graham take that spot. Although I don't think that's likely, but I feel like it could happen. Ron Parker's a good player, and that's a really good person to have for your depth. So I feel like the job is his. But at the same time, there is a part of me that's beginning to think Graham's also really good, and if they want to free up just a little bit of money, we'll see. But I still feel like right now, Ron Parker's got the job. Cornerback, we've got six guys: Desmond Trufant, Robert Alford, Brian Poole, Isaiah Oliver, Bleedier Wilson, and Justin Bethel. I think Bethel could be a surprise cut. He's not the world's best corner, but he's just such a great special teamer. But then again, do you keep six corners active on game day? Bleedier Wilson's a guy who is saying, "Hey, you need to play me. I'm a good corner," and I think he's going to make the roster pretty handedly. Do they make Isaiah Oliver active as the season gets going and let Bethel do his thing on special teams? I don't know. I'm really curious about this, but I feel like right now that group is set. There's no other cornerback to me that could crack that lineup, and I think they will keep six. So, who's inactive from that group? I have no idea. But that would be something to kind of monitor as the season gets going. But I think right now that's your corner group. Special teams, of course, we've got Matt Bryant, Matt Bosher, Josh Harris, and that's your 53. That's where Corey's brain is percolating right now, and obviously there's not going to be 10 for sure guys that are with the Falcons. They're going to be on the practice squad, but here are seven guys who I think that have a chance of coming back, or guys that I think that they would want to bring back. You got Malik Williams, a running back. I feel like Justin Crawford, if he doesn't make our roster, will make a roster somewhere else. But that obviously is another guy, he or Malik Williams, who could get that running back spot on the practice squad. But Malik has had a really nice preseason, too. They're two solid players. I think the Falcons have done a nice job of scouting those guys. And I think they're going to be with the team somewhere. But I think one of them will end up back in Atlanta. J.C. Hasenhauer has been getting some decent run. I think I can't really tell how good he is, but it feels like that could be a guy that they would want to take and develop in the offseason. Dontez Bird would be the guy I think they would want to keep as a receiver. I think they've been impressed with him, even if they don't have a roster spot for him. I think they might say, "Hey, look, we don't have room for you, but unless you get picked up on the waiver, we'd love to have you back on our practice squad," and I think he'd say yes. Emmanuel Smith would be a linebacker I think they could keep. He's apparently had one or two good plays this preseason, and I think he could continue to develop. And I'd say either him or Ellerbe would get that linebacker gig. Chris Lammons, I think, would be the cornerback that they would want to keep. He is a solid player. He's a guy that can, come out and get that run in the preseason, and then kind of go on the practice squad, and then let him be further developed for maybe more down the road. There might be some spots next season in the cornerback group, since Bethel and Bleedier Wilson are on one-year deals, and Poole, once his contract is up, might get a bigger offer elsewhere. David Marvin, I think they're going to keep David Marvin as a kicker. I think that he's a guy that may not have a job when the season's over, but since Matt Bryant is continuing to get older, I think if Marvin continue, he had a nice field goal the other night, or a nice at least extra kick on the extra on the touchdown. But I think if you look at him and go, "Hey, we like you. Obviously, our job is set, and we can't carry two kickers, but we want to keep you in town and let you develop, and see if maybe, perhaps next season, if Matt Bryant retires, you could be our guy or can at least compete for it." So I wouldn't be surprised there. And then defensive tackle John Cunningham. That's the guy who I think that some folks are beginning to say, "Hey, he's got some talent." And I don't think they're going to carry five defensive tackles. He could be a surprise roster addition. That's a guy I would keep on an eye for an eye kind of a, when we get to September, you're like raising your eye, like, "Wait, who is this guy that just made the roster?" That would be John Cunningham. I think that he's got the potential for that. But right now, I think that they would want to keep Wimbush and kind of let the pass rush have enough depth. But if maybe you could flip those and say maybe Wimbush is on the practice squad and that Cunningham is the fifth defensive tackle. But to me, those are the two undrafted guys right now that I think could make some waves. And obviously JT Jones, I think, would come back to the practice squad. If he doesn't make the roster, is obviously someone who you need to keep an eye on as well for potentially making the 53. So we've got a couple of user questions I'm going to get through here real quick. I know we're getting a bit long in the tooth on this episode. Let's see. So Evan Birchfield, our guest last week, says who will be our weak side linebacker come week one? I'm saying Duke. Sticking with that. I think Duke's got the talent. He's got the. I think he's beginning to earn the trust of the coaching staff to have the job this year. I think it's his. And he also asked, what matchups are you looking forward to in the dress rehearsal game? I'll just say one big one. I want to see what happens when Julio and Devonta are on the field and what this first-team offense can do against that Jaguars defense. If everybody's out there, they're healthy. I want to see what this offense looks like in a position where they actually are trying to get some things done to kind of put some good tape on the year and kind of get into a good rhythm. Obviously, it's not going to be the most telling, but I think it will be somewhat telling. And I'm really curious to see how they're going to look when everybody's on the field going against a really good defense. Let's see. Clem DB asks, at Clem Freco, was Ito's permanent spin a good situational choice or a bad habit making him miss some opportunities? You know, I think he's a guy that, needs to take some time to figure out exactly where his game is going to be. And when he makes decisions like that, you know, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But I think in the long run, you know, he's going to develop a style. Obviously, you like when a running back can kind of flip off the linebacker and kind of make sure he's able to make those moves that kind of bounce him off when he's in tight coverage. But I think right now, he's just got to have some time to develop. He's not going to be a guy that they're going to be relying on to be a superstar week one. But at the same time, it does help that the Falcons have Devonta and Tevin. So when you see him kind of make things like that, don't get super worried because I don't think it really indicates one or two ways. He's a rookie. He's still learning. Ito will be fine. He's got a good staff to train him. But I think right now his role this year is going to be quite defined. It's just being that third running back, playing on special teams, and, you know, being able to maybe take over for Tevin one day. Jonathan Nowitzki, at Fran Runchtown, asks, will Hooper take the big step forward and become a real weapon this season? Yeah, I think so. We kind of talked about at the top of the show. I think he's going to have a really good year, so I'm really excited to be on the Hooper train and hope it takes me where it hopes I want to go. So, Joey Weaver at FTRS Joey asks, does the recent draft success, especially on defense, sustainable, or is a bubble going to burst when Debo, Keanu, and them need to get paid? I think Dan Quinn is probably one of the best defensive talent evaluators in the league, so I think as long as he's here, they're going to continue to be able to draft guys that can be good defensive players. If this draft class comes through, that's going to be a lot of successful classes under Quinn, because now that 17 is coming out, and you're seeing Tack begin to come into his own, DeMonta Casey's playing really well. I know we don't talk about Sean Harlow, but, you know, maybe he could be something down the road. And obviously, you know, Duke's kind of up and down, but not every draft class is going to be what the Falcons had in 2016, but not every draft class is going to be that awful 12-year. I don't think that they're ever going to have another one of those under Quinn, but I definitely think down the road, you don't need to always expect them to just draft a bunch of starters, that you might have more guys that they want to get in that they need to develop, or maybe guys that just don't pan out, because not everybody can always be perfect in their player analysis. But I think right now that we should be fine. But then again, always be wary down the road that drafts are not an exact science, and that even the best teams can sometimes not have the world's best class. Some other questions we can look for here. Andre Laval Fuller II asks, how good do you think the special teams will be this year? An improvement from last year? Yeah, I think so. I think that, you know, over the last couple of years, special teams have never been the Falcons' bread and butter, but I think this year they've got some guys like Justin Bethel, Russell Gage, Marvin Hall, who look like they can be good gunners. Leedy will be a good special teams player. Duke's a good special team player. I think that they've got some better talent this year. Will they be completely mistake-prone or mistake-free? Will they be more mistake-prone like they were last year? That I don't know. Casey will get some reps on special teams. So they've got talent, obviously. It just depends whether Armstrong can get them ready to be a consistently kind of error-free unit that they can prevent the returners. Maybe. I'm hopeful, but I think right now the most likely situation would be the Falcons fielding a better unit. I don't know if it'll be quite amazing, but I think it will be improved for sure. Let's see. We've got at Aphids Gaming asks, could Calvin Ridley potentially push for the number 2 spot on the depth chart? I don't think so. I think he'll still be the third guy because I think even though he's a very promising rookie, he doesn't quite have that book of experience that Julio and obviously Sanu has. So I think obviously there's no way in any of this he was ever going to replace Julio on the depth chart. I think, but for some folks, they're wondering, hey, can he replace Sanu? And I think that the most likely situation would be not right now. I think he will eventually. But I think this season the Falcons will use him as their third receiver, and that he'll just be one of the best third receivers, if not the best one in the league. A couple more questions here. Rohan Daswani asked, will Isaiah Oliver do well in the NFL? I think he will, but I think it's going to take some time. I think that people need to give him time to develop. I think when he was drafted, there was this excitement that, hey, this guy could be really good. And I think what the Falcons and all of our fans are learning is, hey, he's going to need some time. And I think that that's expected. He's a second-round draft pick. He's going to be a good player, but they need to give him time to be able to take some lumps in the preseason, learn from his mistakes, and then kind of get onto the field here and there sporadically. To me, he was never going to be a guy that was just going to be an impact starter day one. The Falcons have too much talent at cornerback, and they have the luxury of letting Oliver develop. Sometimes that really helps a guy, where they don't have to be the superstar day one, and they can kind of work behind the scenes and really get good at their game before they have to be put in game time pressure situations. So I think he'll do well, but I don't think he'll do well now. I think it'll be more of doing well down the road. Ron Swanson Jr. asks, should we be worried about the Falcons going 0-2 in preseason? I've seen a lot of people saying it's a lost season while it's in preseason. Oh, no, it's not. That's not true, because your first team is only playing like 10 minutes at the most. So, no, that's not true at all. That is completely false. There's nothing you should give up. They're going to be a good team. The preseason is completely meaningless. Like, again, no one's trying to win. That's the biggest thing I don't think fans need to think that they need to grasp is no one's trying to win right now. I mean, obviously you want to win in like a theoretical sense, but if they were trying to win, they wouldn't be pulling Matt Ryan after two drives. So that should give you everything you need to know there. But no, I understand sometimes that, you know, when you see losses and you're like, ooh, I don't know what this means. Don't worry about it because preseason is a lot different for the players and coaches than it is for us. Matt Stars asks, let's see, how do you see the receptions and yards breaking down for the Falcons' weapons? I think Julio could have like a 1,500, 1,600 yard season. I think that with Ridley and Sanu doing what they're doing in the offense, it takes pressure off of Julio to have to be a 2,000 yard receiver potentially. He's never going to have to do that with what Atlanta's giving him. I think that keeps Julio fresh and it gives him more opportunity to have those just huge games. But no, I think right now, you know, I'm bad about doing the whole yardage breakdown thing, but I think you're going to see big year for Julio. I think Sanu will have a nice year. I think Ridley will have a nice year. I think they're going to have to work on sharing the ball between those guys and Hooper. I think those will be your four receiving targets. And then obviously you want to see Devonta and Tevin get in the passing game. And then maybe Marvin Hall, Justin Hardy, Russell Gage, potentially. I don't know. I mean, but to me, the ball will mainly in the air be going to one of those main receivers in Hooper and then Devonta as well. And hopefully Tevin, because he's also really good at it. They have no shortage of options in that regard. So, you know, I'm not sure what the yards will be exactly, but I think they will be a lot. Lance Burson asks, is it possible the Falcons could add a linebacker or a D lineman through the waiver wire? Maybe, but I think that they're happy with what they have. I think they've got enough options in-house to where they're not going to have to go waiver wire hunting this year. If there's just like this really good player that just kind of falls out of a camp somewhere and just wants to come play for a contender, maybe on the defensive line or maybe in the linebacking core. I'm not sure, but I feel like right now, no. I think that they would be happy with what they have and feel they have the flexibility with their own group to be able to stock all their positions. Will Calvin really get the returner job? He's the only one who's looked good. I think it's a potential, but I think right now, I think when you see these injuries happen on special teams, it makes you get a bit wary to put your best guys out there. And I think with Calvin Ridley, if something happens and he got hurt on a special teams return, then the eye would be squarely pointed at the coaching staff by the front office saying, what were you guys thinking of putting him out there on special teams? We needed him on the whole offense, you know? Like, what were you thinking? Even though I think Calvin Ridley would be a good returner, I think it's a guy like, I think also Julio Jones would be a good returner, but you're not going to put Julio back there because of the injury potential. I think the job will be Marvin Hall or Justin Hardy or maybe Ito Smith. I think one of those three guys is going to win out. Hall would be my immediate guess, maybe Hardy, but I think that either one of those two guys would be really good. But I think right now, I think at the end of the day, the Falcons will eventually say, hey, we got to keep Ridley healthy. We got to keep him on the offense and let him do what we drafted him to do, which was not be a returner. But I think Keith Armstrong would love it, of course. And then if the Falcons look bad after the preseason game three, do I completely panic? I think if they look more up and down, then there might be a bit more pause we need to put on this whole they're going to win every game by 50 points idea. But, they had some up and downs in that Cardinals preseason game last year for the third round. And I think that was a bit more indicative than a lot of us were hoping to admit the offense would be. So I think it will be somewhat telling. I think that there's going to be some stuff to watch on Saturday where maybe it's not completely what they'll look like, but I think it could be somewhat of what they look like. And it might be a bit more telling than both the Jets and Chiefs games were to us. And then two more, or actually three more. Vinicius asked over under wins for the season and this year's Falcons MVP. I think they're going to go 11-5 or 12-4. That's where my guesses are right now. I think because of the division, we're gonna struggle to have a team that really gets to that 12-5 or that 12-4 slot. I'll say 11-5 for the best they can do. 12-4 would be obviously the best, I think. I think the worst would be a 10-6 or a 9-7. I think if they get some injuries or maybe Sarkisian doesn't quite develop like we hope, and they just a lot of these teams that are on the schedule end up being better, I think there's a potential for that. But then again, I still feel like they're going to have about a 10 to 12 win season. This year's MVP, I'm going to say, ooh, that's a good question. I'm going to say Matt Ryan. I think that Matt Ryan is going to have a really nice year this year. He's got so many weapons, and I think that's going to be very reflective on what he can do as a quarterback. I'm expecting him, now that he's got this big deal, he's going to want to live up to it. Ryan really, I think more than anybody in that locker room, wants to rectify what happened last year. I think he is just such a determined leader of this team. I think he, and then I think Julio as well, has a lot to prove after what happened in the summer. I think he's going to want to come out and say, hey, this is why you talk about Julio Jones, not because of my contract, because of what I do on the field. So I'll say both of those guys might share it, and you'll just see the stars of the team really defining why they're stars. And then our last two questions from That's Kurt. First one, how many Pro Bowlers do you think the Falcons on defense will have, and who will they be? I'll go with four. I'll say Grady Jarrett, Deion Jones, Keanu Neal, and Desmond Trufant. I think Trufant will have a bounce back year and will be able to finally live up to where he's typically been and be a Pro Bowl corner. I think Grady Jarrett's going to have a huge year and will finally cement himself as one of the better defensive tackles. Deion Jones and Keanu obviously were Pro Bowlers this past year, and I think that they will continue to play like that. So I'll say four, and maybe Beasley, if Beasley's able to get back to where he was in 16. And Tack has potential, but I think Tack's, would have to do what Beasley did to maybe get there as well. But maybe one of the pass rushers, but I think right now I feel comfortable with four. And now that I've been talking for almost 50 minutes, I feel comfortable going to get a drink of water. This has been the Falcoholic Post-Game Podcast. This has been Corey Woodruff. I guess I can talk for 50 minutes uninterrupted. I don't know if that's a good or bad thing, but thanks for listening anyway. You can probably hear my voice beginning to go. I probably need to go do something else. But before I do that, you can follow me on Twitter at CoreyWoodruff47. This has been fun. Enjoyed it. Thank you guys so much for joining us. I love doing this. Love being able to fill your about 30-minute to hour block every week with Falcons information. We'll be back next week with more Falcony talk as we break down the Jaguars preseason game and begin to get a better idea of what these Falcons look like. Be sure to follow along with the Falcoholic at the website and on Twitter at the Falcoholic, on Facebook, of course, and everywhere that the Falcoholic is. You can make sure to find all the best takes in Falcondom you can. So, of course, guys, thank you so much. Your listenership is incredibly appreciated. It's really, really sweet that you take the time out to listen and patronize our podcast. So thank you from the bottom of my heart. I really appreciate it. And have a great week, guys. Go Falcons, and enjoy it.
Hello, I'm Spencer Hall from SB Nation, and I want to tell you about my new show, It Seems Smart. It Seems Smart is a show about people doing things that, for some reason or another, seem smart at the time. Those things might include doing a little cocaine and driving a bike up a mountain. Or, I don't know, Maybe racing 100 miles per hour across the country in the middle of the night with no one's permission. Or even stealing a bat from an umpire's room in a Major League Baseball park. Check it out, and if you like it, tell a friend. I'm Spencer Hall. Don't do anything smart.